Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about sugar addiction. Is it even an addiction? How does it affect your body? Some scientists think it's causing cancer is the worst thing for you. Others think this is overblown. We're going to bring you the facts. Then after that, we're going to be talking about how pregnancy relates to aging and sugar daddies and sugar mamas. And sugar they thems. Let's get this right.
Yeah.
Ooh. For you.
That wasn't in my
A study. Sugar they'd-y.
Yeah.
A sugar they'd eat. They definitely exist.
I'm not witty enough to think of, like, I was like trying so hard to think of another name, but.
A sugar they'd eat. How you doing? This is a talk podcast.
Oh yeah. We've been chatting a lot about this talk podcast. I'm doing okay. I, like an hour ago, was feeling like, oh, this weather sucks, but actually being next to you, sitting here on this chair, have a bit of pep in my step.
Oh,
suddenly.
Wow. It's just my glowing face looking at my red Irish face looking at you.
I don't know. Are you feeling
April
anything?
Showers bring May flowers. That's what I always think. I'm like, the ground's getting soaked. At least we're going to have growth.
Nowadays, May flowers are killed by June smoke.
Fires.
Yeah.
Oh.
If last summer was any indication.
Okay, wow, you're really bringing it down. Let's bring it up.
What's up? Like, what else is going on? Thank you, everyone, for listening to my song.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Mind is running. Stream Mitch Moffitt, mind is running.
It's just hit platinum on the Billboard, so wait. I'm feeling pretty good. Didn't I tell you?
Wait, what does that mean?
On the Spotify Billboard.
Okay, you're on.
I got 2 million streams.
Is there a platinum? Wait,
I'm
going cross-eyed. That is like... When people say they go platinum, that's not Spotify, is it? Isn't it like
I
radio?
Have no idea.
I really think it's like from like back in the day when we all listened to like Mix 99.9.
Yeah, I thought it was record sales. I thought they were like when they literally sold X like million records or CDs.
And don't even get us started on what the difference between a record and an album and a song is.
Or an EP, even.
That's okay. Yeah. This is not a music podcast.
But yeah, no, I'm happy to have it out. Feels nice. Got lots of nice feedback. And
good
so,
job.
You know, on to the next.
Okay. Everybody's stream mind is running. And now we're going to be talking about sugar and not sugar daddies yet. That's later.
That's later on.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time.
So are you scared of sugar?
Not really, but I don't have, in particular, a sweet tooth, so it's never been something that I'm super focused on. But for this pod, like, there is and has been in recent years so much controversy around sugar, whether it's just, like, the most evil thing on this planet. This also breaks down to just, like, carbohydrates, people being so afraid of carbs.
Sugar worse than war.
I mean, some people might make you think that. So we're going to go through the science of, like, not only what it actually does to your body, what research is out there in terms of sugar consumption. Should you be worried when you're like holding a banana to your mouth and it's like, is there too much sugar in this? And
okay, then, that's insane.
Well, we'll find out.
I'm picturing gummy bears. But like the also concept of sugar addiction is very like in the lore right now that it's addictive, that it's like a drug, that it affects your brain like this, that it makes you sick. Like, it's all really interesting, very controversial. So we're going to, break down the most recent research.
Yeah. So where do you, like, are you a sweet tooth kind of person?
I guess, like,
I'm
not.
Asking this like I don't know you, you know? Like,
well, no. Like, I love, if I'm out to dinner, I don't think the dinner has ended unless there's dessert.
And I'm the opposite. I'm like, give me more savory.
Yeah. But then at the same time, like, after reading all this research, it's like truly some health influencers are like, if I even want dessert, it's like I'm a sinner.
Yeah.
But it's like, I do think that, like, outside of the world of everything we're about to talk about, I think dessert is like important and fun and maybe sometimes my favorite part of a meal if I'm out for dinner. It's like, are you kidding? Let's keep this going. There's a key lime pie. What's that like? There's a chocolate cake. Delish. Like, I'm not saying no to those things because it's joy, my friends.
I really like desserts, but I think my my problem is that I overfill on the meal and my body like I can't leave room for dessert is the problem.
I always feel like I know that it's like
when I'm really hungry, I want
but
dessert.
It's like there's a different part of my stomach for dessert. But I actually do find that like if someone was like, if I had like a steak frites at a French restaurant and someone was like, okay, now you have to eat more steak frites. I'm like, well, I'm going to vomit on the table. But then they're like, oh, there's a creme brulee coming. I'm like, delicious. And there's room. Like I have that. I have whatever that is. I know you don't. Cause you'll be like, no, enjoy it, Greg. And I'll be like, you literally aren't eating this.
I think a lot of people relate with you though. Cause there's even been studies and like techniques that people are like, just give yourself a little bit of sweet. Cause a lot of times your body craves that. People like, Health Nuts. I feel like this was like a decade or two ago when they'd be like, add some berries into your salad because that will quench the right word? Or like help your sugar tooth or your sweet tooth. Hmm. And then you won't crave dessert after dinner as much because you got some of that.
Man,
like,
this
sweet
stuff all gets
But then
so
I'm just like,
whack.
Surely there's like sugar in your meal as well. I don't know. I think it's like partially just what you're conditioned to. My family didn't really have a lot of dessert growing up.
Yeah, whereas we did. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the concept of sugar being addictive. So, I just listened to Mark Hyman talk about this all week, and it bothered me quite a bit. But
I don't really know who that is.
He's like,
this guy on the street.
No, he's a doctor, and people love him. Internet. Celebrities love him. LA loves him because he has the doctor in front of his name. Okay. And he gives you very tangible ways to, in my opinion, have disordered eating. Like he just is very like, he really thinks that sugar is a culprit for a lot of things, disease, sickness, cancer. Like he'll go there on his podcast. Okay. And I think in my opinion is it gives people quite an easy, if you're really interested in this stuff and like really want to like quote unquote, like level up your life, getting rid of sugar and reading labels about like high fructose corn syrup and all these things can be really like satisfying, I'm sure, to like get rid of it. It's like there's a lot of like hidden high fructose corn syrup and lots of things that pitch themselves as healthy. And I bet there's a little bit of a dopamine hit when you're like, found it, not eating that.
Yeah.
And he's very whole foods. He's very like, he invented putting the full lemon in water and literally like full rind and everything, grinding the lemon and drinking that.
Seeds and everything?
Yeah, because of the actual sort of like contents of the rind. Like he just has like a really intelligent, fast ways to use science to optimize your life.
You're saying that's good or bad? Like I can't tell if you're going somewhere where you're like,
I find him frustrating because he's like, he thinks that sugar is all bad and he's talking to you as if you're going to just live your life never eating sugar again, as if that's easy. Okay. And a lot of his guests are like celebrities and people who I'm like, they're really motivated to change their lifestyles. They have lots of money. They live in LA. And mm-hmm. there's just like, I just sometimes I'm like, this is not talking to everyone, but I get why we're all interested in it. And he's like super viral on like YouTube and stuff. Okay. But he,
I mean, I think it's probably, I'll let you continue. It's not for no reason, right? Like definitely a lot of processed foods we can quantitatively say are not great for the body. Right?
Yeah.
Like, and yes. I'm going to talk a little bit later about like how sugar affects your microbiome and yeah. what the general health impacts of like, what they call it, free sugar. So I'm not talking about fruit right now. I'm talking about when sugar is added to
not things. Talking about fruit, you said.
I'm not talking about fruit.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, you said fruit fast, and it sounded like
sorry.
Free.
I meant free sugar is the term that's used when sugar is like added to things.
Gummy bear vibes.
Yeah. And just like processed foods, right? So you might even have like a granola bar or cereal where they've added sugar
yeah,
to
yeah.
it.
My point was that he talks about sugar like it's an addiction.
Hmm.
So now I'm going to talk about the science about how that is, why people think that and why we should be careful okay. about that.
Yeah.
So the notion of like food addiction often focuses on the key word of addiction, which neurobiologists define. I thought it was so interesting. Addictions involve persistent, compulsive, and uncontrolled behaviors that are both maladaptive and destructive.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, that is interesting. Uh-huh. Like, it has to be
like bad
destructive.
For you. Yeah, or like, yeah, bad, objectively not helping your life.
Which I find interesting because people will talk about like running addiction, and it's like, okay, so it's about people who run so much that their knees hurt or something.
Yeah, or yeah. Oh, yeah. But you run so much that you can't focus. If you're sitting at work and you haven't had your run.
Yeah. Morning, I'm like, okay.
Maybe like it ruins your day if you haven't had a run.
I thought that was a good definition. And in a lot of the studies I was reading, the destructive, maladaptive words were used. And I was like, okay, I held on to that. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I thought was interesting is like the word destructive, they relate a lot to drug addicts because sometimes people who are addicted to drugs will actually like steal money from neighbors or family, like that's where the destructive word comes okay. in. And then there was one study that found people who okay so a lot of this talks about like relating sugar addiction to obesity and stuff like that, and it actually found that people who have elevated BMIs, so like people who maybe are more obese, it's significantly associated with a lower risk of committing crimes.
Oh.
I just thought that was, it was like a separate study. I was like, that's really interesting.
That
like,
is interesting.
Yeah. I was like, okay, but that's not related. But I was like, that's okay. cool.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Maybe that's not maladaptive.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's just like, you know, people aren't, you know, maybe stealing money from their families to like buy a suite. Yeah. But what happens is drugs like opioids directly affect and release dopamine in your brain. They lead to addiction. And we know that. And there's a lot of studies specifically in animals where they go, okay, the brain regions that fired when you take drugs and release dopamine are similar when you eat sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's led people like Mark
like
Hyman.
Sugar is a drug.
Yes. Okay. So what this study and this meta-analysis said, which I thought was so interesting, was A, all like Harvard and Yale and all these places that have these sort of like scales of addiction do not put sugar and fat, because that's also linked mm-hmm. in, as an addictive substance. And one of the reasons is just that when you eat, like you're getting feedback from so many other systems than just your brain. Like you got adipose tissue, gastric distension. There's like all these things happening in your gut, happening in your liver, happening. And they all work together to like decide whether you're hungry or not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas these drugs are impacting your brain and releasing neurotransmitters, and they're addictive.
Right.
They're like, okay, just because your brain fires in these animal studies doesn't mean there's so much else going on that we can't link them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then one thing I thought was so crazy was that like those are all related to fMRI analysis studies. And what they're saying, and I thought this is like so important for us and for everyone to know, like that all that is talking about is blood flow in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's never talking about neurotransmitter release. It's never talking about the mechanisms that cause addiction the way that drugs do.
Right. Whereas we can show with specific drugs exactly how they're
yes.
affecting neurotransmitters.
And then therefore causing addiction because it's right. changing your neurotransmitters and neuroplasticity.
That's not to say sugar isn't doing that, but you're saying a lot of these studies are just looking at like blood flow in the brain.
Yes.
Or brain
and then Mark Hyman and people, and even us, like when we've done sugar videos, mm-hmm. we're like, we'll talk about these fMRI studies because it is interesting to know when you eat sugar, there's blood flow in your brain similar to when you do cocaine.
Right.
Like that's so catchy. But they're like, we cannot say that it is addictive in the same way and even say it's addictive, period, because we don't understand it from a neurotransmitter level. There's way too much complicated stuff going on in your body. And they think by saying that it's addictive is actually going to make it more challenging for physicians and people to properly assess how to deal with sugar's effect on the body.
Yeah. Okay, so like, that's fair, because it's like important to be able to classify something as accurately as possible so that we can find solutions that are like addiction to something probably has to be treated very different.
Yes.
Than like anything else, like a habitual pattern or something like that.
Yes, know? Totally. And it's like, if you just think of it as addictive, it's going to change the way that you treat people's reaction to it. And so when I listen to Mark Hyman all weekend, he's saying it's addictive. He's saying it's like a drug, and he's bringing these studies up, these animal studies, fMRI things. It's frustrating when you read the most recent science and they're completely trying not to make people talk like that.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard because, and I'm not trying to defend him. I haven't really listened to him or anything, so I'm not really like speaking on that. But in general, like, I understand, like, from the other side of it, you're thinking, okay, like, there's a lot of extra sugar in our foods. There's a lot of extra calories, not just sugar. Like, a lot of foods have like oil and fats and things to make them taste not only really good, be really super like a quote unquote addictive. Yeah, see, I even just like, said
and
the
companies
word.
Are designed to make
you want more. They're not that filling, so you eat a lot of them, or you're not satiated for a long time. And this is a growing problem, like in the Western world, where we have the affluence to buy and have access to these like snacks and foods that are highly processed, taste so freaking good, make regular fruit or regular foods taste so much more dull in comparison.
Yeah.
So on that, coming from there, I understand that some people are like, we need to treat this like an addiction because we're literally fighting an industry that's like tapping into an evolutionary response, which is that our bodies as humans are like, if something is highly caloric, we should take it when we have it, right? Like, our bodies have evolved to know we might be in times of drought, we might be in times of starvation. So when you have access to honey, eat it. Who cares? And that's why your body literally stores fat, because it's like, for the times when we have nothing, we can tap into fat. And so I get it. And we've had a lot of problems with, whether it be like high blood pressure, heart problems, and whatever else comes with like eating too many calories. I think this is like the pendulum swinging the other side and people trying to say like, okay, get rid of it completely. I think, and you know where all of our podcasts mostly go, it's just like, ultimately balance is going to be the answer. Like, sugar inherently isn't bad. Just like eating food isn't inherently bad. But if you gorge and gorge and gorge and gorge, there's consequences. If you don't eat enough, there's consequences. Find the balance. So
yeah, that's what frustrates me about Mark Hyman. And I'm saying the name because he's not about balance. And in fact, in a lot of them, they talk about like fully food pushers. Sugar. They're like, you have to cut people out of your life who say, oh, it's chocolate cake after dinner. And I'm like, that's horrible. Yeah. Like, to me, I'm like, that is so not like, with everything, consult your physician. I went to the doctor yesterday. Everything he talked to me about was about moderation, about balance, and about, he would never tell me to cut someone out of my life who
food
wants to eat a sugar thing with me.
Yeah. Food is so like, intertwined with like our culture, our social connections, our community. And so it's a little bit short-sighted to be like, you have to put food at the forefront. There are lots of people who don't necessarily have the healthiest diets, but might be really have amazing mental health because of like everyone surrounding them. Like, you can be overweight or underweight and still have a quality life.
Yeah.
Of course there's extremes. Of course you should talk to your doctor, and it's very like, most people will attest, you go to the gym, you move, you eat well, you're going to feel good. Mm-hmm. But that's like not the only way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, sugar is spooky out there in these streets.
I mean, there's so many trends and fads. I think we just constantly go through them, and we're just in a phase where like sugar is a demon for some reason. I'll say some of the things, like there is a lot of studies now coming out on like the impact on your gut microbiome. And this always terrifies me because they're literally just like, and when you're young and you eat lots of sugar, you're fucked for life.
Wait, it still is like when you're young?
Yeah, this was, so they know that like the microbiome more and more is associated with like the development of your brain and your body, and like your stomach defines a lot of your health, right? And now they're looking at adolescence, like how sugar, we know sugar can change your microbiome. It makes sense. There's like bacteria that eat the food that goes in your stomach. And your microbiome is linked to developmental income. So this
developmental what? Income?
Developmental outcomes. Okay. Sorry.
Incomes. Developmental income. Like, how much did you get for allowance?
So this particular one was a study on rats. Obviously this is not directly applicable, but you know what we do with rats, right? When they are given free access to sugar, it changes their microbiome, affects their memory, anxiety in adulthood, as well as like the gut bacteria.
Wait,
in the stomach.
When they were young.
Yeah, when they're given it freely, when they're young, it like alters their brain literally. So they look at their hippocampus, like parts of the brain that they're like, that as adults now is different than the ones who didn't just have this free access to sugar.
Hmm.
And they're seeing like memory deficiencies and anxiety, quote unquote, like disorder. Yeah. Okay. I have a memory problem.
I'm like, now. Mitch doesn't remember anything ever. And it actually is like a huge issue in our relationship. Cause I'll be like, remember that restaurant we had that beautiful moment at? And you'll be like, what restaurant? Then I'll get mad. Then you'll get mad that I got mad.
And then I'll be like, where am I? Who am I? What's happening?
Wait, so it's like if you're a young rat and you have tons of sugar, it affects the rat's memory and increases their anxiety, likely linked to their gut microbiome.
Yes, they see the gut changes. And then as adults, they see their brains have changed as well compared to sort of like control groups.
Which does lead me to the like all of our friends with like babies and kids. And it is like, so no sugar.
Yeah. Like, but OK, so this is interesting. I found another really recent study, 2023, on over 100,000 people in the UK.
Oh, so they went to the polls, did they?
What?
Oh, so they went and did a survey, did they?
I hate you. They did what?
So we had to go do a survey, did we?
Okay. The result of this study basically found that your total... Oh, sorry. Okay. I'm just going to start.
He passes out.
I'm literally...
Mitch?
So we obviously know there's associations between dietary carbohydrates and cardiovascular disease. That's like established, right?
Wait. Slow down. There's established... Say it one more time.
There's a link between your carbs that you consume in your diet and cardiovascular disease.
Which like... And in this case, carbs like
is sugar.
Yeah, I know.
It breaks down.
Yeah.
This is why people are like afraid of carbs. But this study found that your total carb intake actually... is not associated with that, and it's more related to free sugar. This is me going back to the beginning where they realize
sugar.
When people are eating sugar that has fiber with it, so that's like whole foods of like apples and bananas and anything that's coming like wrapped, even like whole grains and like brown rice and stuff, that is inversely associated with cardiovascular disease. Fiber is. So I think it's really important to remember, like when we're talking about kids and stuff, yes, giving them candy is where these like cardiovascular outcomes might be. You might be increasing their risk.
Hmm.
But when you're giving them like healthy sweets, whether that be like fruit and stuff, I just don't want people to walk away thinking they should not be feeding fruit.
That's not what...
Because that fruit comes with fiber.
Yeah, sorry. That's not when I'm picturing our friends not giving their kids sugar. They're giving them tons of fruit. They're not giving them free sugar.
Like gummies and
like,
I don't know what else. Like apple juice, for example. Like when you're now in the juice form, you're actually not consuming the fiber. Like anything that's been juiced, they've like pulped it, right? They've removed most of the stuff that's like...
So when we were growing up, like did our parents do this or were we just like mowing down on sugar when we were like one?
Well, I think, okay, here is the challenge. So sugar and added sugar, especially when we were younger, added sugar is not always obvious. I think people are more educated. Even like around us. I don't know about in the whole world, but people are now more aware than ever of like added sugars. But I think at the time, like think of the breakfast aisle. Even today, it's like Pop-Tarts, cereal that's like literally just sugar added on top of...
Pop-Tarts are crazy.
Eggos, as a breakfast.
Eggos concept.
With syrup. It's just like inherently those things aren't just so bad, but when it's like that's your breakfast.
My parents, oh my God, I got so lucky in the like no sugar. I remember when like grade eight, they'd be like, we finally caved and got you Pop-Tarts. Open up the... It's not Pop-Tart brand.
No,
it's knockoff. Open up the foil. No icing on it. It's just jam and the cookie.
Like because it was done wrong or
no? Because they're like, we bought the ones without icing. So you know how like there's like the Pop-Tart and there's the jam, and the Pop-Tart itself is like not even that sweet. It's like
disgusting.
Cardboard. Yeah. I would open it, get all excited. I remember the first time they like allowed me, and it's like, oh, there's no icing on this one. It was so frustrating.
Yeah, I'm gonna die for sure. Like I would eat like toaster strudels for breakfast. That's the one where it's frozen. It's like a pastry with jam inside that you get a little package of like icing.
Oh, and it looks like cum.
Yes.
Yes.
And you spread that on and it like melts just like cum, as you said.
Wait. But how are you making the toaster? Oh, in the toaster.
Yeah.
Wait, so it's a Pop-Tart vibe.
But it's pastry. Like, it actually, like, flakes when you eat it. It is actually so good.
Is it thin enough to go on a toaster?
Thin enough to go on a toaster.
But it's a pastry?
I don't know if I should call it pastry, but I think it's pastry. To me, it's pastry. Yeah,
wow.
It's pastry.
Because like, I definitely remember having those, like, at, like, friends' houses and stuff. And I'm like, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of something different that involved an oven.
An oven?
Oh, what's the one where they poke the stomach?
Oh, like Pillsbury?
Oh, yeah. Doughboy. It's not that.
No, but...
I feel like it's the same company.
Do you want me to look up Toaster Strudel for you?
Kind of.
Okay, well,
because I do just remember being like, damn, they're like, we're dumping cum all over our breakfast. But it is crazy. Like, companies got away with being like, oh, wow, that looks like, amazing. Okay, it is toaster sized.
Yeah, it's like the size of like a piece of bread.
And it is absolutely cum. Wait, so you would have those for breakfast?
Yeah. Wow. And that's just like pure sugar on top and in the middle. You know
that,
I mean?
So, okay, this is when I become Mark Hyman. I'm like, okay, that is wild. Like, if you're like, okay, kids, we're going to start your day with
and
a toaster strudel.
That would be advertised on television as breakfast.
That is.
So I understand why there's this stance of like, it is challenging, and I can understand why some people are like, just focus on eating whole foods because you can't quote unquote go wrong. At least then your sugars are tied up with fiber. At least then your protein is coming from like whole foods. It's not overly processed. At least then your fats are probably more like quote unquote healthy fats.
So it's like you give your kid, like I'm literally becoming Mark Hyman. I'm like, you give your kid a lemon ground up in water with the rind. No, it's like you give your kid, that's why it's like, oatmeal with no sugar, yogurt, and berries. Although Mark Hyman hates dairy, but like it is like that's whole food breakfast. Like I'm just kind of like, what?
I just think it for me, it's moderation. I don't think you should be so scared to add like a little sugar in something. Like it's okay to have dessert. Like it's okay to have oatmeal with a bit of syrup or a bit of brown sugar or whatever you're gonna put on it.
But maybe this is because we're like mid-30s and thinking about having a kid, and our kids are having. Our good friends are having kids, that now I'm going to the like, what are you feeding your kids vibes? Which is interesting to me. And I get a little bit more like that toaster strudel thing just like kind of triggered me to be like, totally. Whoa, okay,
your
wait.
Kids, your kids obviously don't really have the autonomy and don't think about that.
Yeah.
Of
and then,
course.
And then it's like sugar. Now I'm totally changing my tune on this like whole sugar addiction. Cause I'm like, it is so funny to watch how motivated some kids are by sugar.
Yeah, I think that maybe is part of this conversation, is that much like social media apps and phones that are designed to hook us, I think like it's easy to like giving candy to a baby is a phrase for a reason, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not fair that these marketing campaigns that are just like feeding kids stuff that looks so good, tastes so good. Of course, then everything else is like boring. They don't want it. And that's like makes it really hard to be a parent when you're
apparently like Danone, the company is like no longer going to advertise ice cream to kids.
Okay.
And it's like
probably not on their own accord. They were probably fucking like sued in Europe or something.
Yeah. It's definitely like Germans got on them. Danone sounds kind of French, but like, I do feel like there is something there with like the addiction word, and a lot of this maybe stemming now from adults' relationships with their kids to sugar, which we maybe aren't like. I'm actually like, I don't have a strong relationship with sugar. Like, I'm not like I'm not like craving it. Mm-hmm. I like enjoy it after a meal. Like, it's not something that. But now I'm like, if I had a kid, maybe that's where this whole Mark Hyman cycle starts. When you start looking at your kid, you start watching them get motivated by sugar, and then you're like, the packaging, the TV, the friends, the Halloween, and it's all like buzzing in your head.
You're definitely right. I don't disagree. I'll just add to that. We're both like super privileged from our upbringing, even though I ate toaster strudels for breakfast. I think like we're lucky to not have to, we haven't had to like overly concern about our health. Like we're privileged from a health perspective and being able-bodied and all that. Like I think there are like many adults who might struggle with quote unquote a sugar addiction. Maybe it's not actually classified as an addiction, but I think adults face this as well, right? A lot of us are sedentary. A lot of us do want convenience because we don't have a lot of time. Even if you're a parent, it's like, I don't have time to make my own food. I'd love to just throw something in the microwave. I'd love to just like have a pre-made ready meal instead of having to like actually cook a wholesome healthy meal that actually might taste like crap.
Yeah,
right? Like I think
that does happen.
We don't struggle
as someone
with that
who
in the
doesn't
same way,
know how to cook very well. I'm like, I'm going to cook healthy. And I'm like, it tastes bad.
Yeah. But yeah, there's something about like, I don't have a refined palate in any way. And I'm okay with boring food a lot of the time. Hmm. Like I'm somebody who's like, give me a pill that gives me my nutrition. And I would eat that most of the time.
Whoa.
Would you not? If there was a pill that could just give you your nutritional needs.
No, I would not do that.
You wouldn't eat that.
But you mean like it
like
makes
not
me
for,
full?
I'm not saying for everything. I'm not saying you can never have like pizza or a meal again. I think I would take that if it made me full and actually we knew like, you know, there's like Soylent and stuff. I'm like, I don't trust that.
Yeah.
But even though we've like just done that before. But if we knew like, oh, this is like a wholesome way to be
okay,
healthy.
I guess, yeah.
Most of my like breakfasts and lunches, I'd probably eat it.
Yeah, you're right. I do eat very like when I'm not like eating out like methodically. It's not like I'm enjoying it that much. Yeah, you're right.
It's maybe a lot of energy and time to like plan and buy groceries. And
we also just like back to gay guys with none of the good traits. It's like we just don't have a cooking passion or even a baking passion. Yeah. But and that will come when we have a kid.
And we have been like lucky to have a generally healthy relationship to food, and not everyone is so lucky for that. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
adults definitely do struggle with food relationships, to whether it's sugar, whether it's fat, whether it's eating certain kinds of snacks or whether.
And even the idea of like this sort of like hack sweet candy, like that way that like you can go into like a health food store and be like, oh, it's the equivalent. Oh, those like Cheesies we had the other day that were chickpeas.
Yeah.
Like there is something there where you're like, oh yeah. Like people are constantly trying to figure out how to give themselves that joy without the guilt.
Yeah.
And it is kind of interesting because I think that's also what this, and can't stop talking about Mark Hyman, but it's like, he's trying to teach people how to actually figure out when you're being lied to and when you're not.
Yeah.
Cause it is like, there's a lot of stuff out there now that's like pitched as healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like catching it in the lie is like very satisfying.
Yeah, because you're like, I don't want to think I'm being healthy and then find out this has like some poison ingredient in it.
Yeah. And like, and that's like obviously why people like love Diet Coke and love
well, it's interesting you bring that up because I think pop or soda or whatever you call it was one of the leading causes for these kinds of movements.
Yeah.
It's because like it's so easily accessible. It's cheaper than water in some places. It's delicious. And it's linked to like weight and diabetes and like a lot of issues. Yeah. Like it's a lot of people drink like 6 Cokes a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think there's been an effort to minimize that, to tax these sugar drinks, right? Like that's happened all over the world. And they've seen like success rates in terms of how much people buy when they levy these taxes on these like high sugar.
And drinks. You can listen to our artificial sweetener episode for information on the science of that. Cause it is really interesting.
Yeah. And it's very controversial in the sense that obviously it's been revolutionary in some ways. Now there's a movement or some research saying, okay, but like, well, do artificial sweeteners affect our gut microbiome as well?
And does it make you just crave sugar more?
Yeah.
Like the taste of it.
This is when I just think it's like, just think about it in moderation. Like,
yeah.
And that's, I don't know the Mark Hyman stuff, but it's like, it's okay to have some sugar. Like, I think you'll know yourself better than exactly. But it's just like knowing when, like how to balance it out in your life. You want to be happy, but like also eating well can make you happy as well. So it's like give yourself it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Don't like, I think if you deprive yourself so harshly, you're going to cave at some point and it's not going to feel worth it.
And I think that like, it's important to know that up-to-date medicine is saying this is not the same as a hard drug. This is not a quote unquote addiction. So your relationship to it, I think is smart to not think of it as an addiction and think of like, what are there other ways that you can curb however you're going to eat the sugar? Cause your brain isn't getting addicted to it the way it is like opioids.
Yeah. But it is so much more accessible than opioids, right? Like it's a drug that's just, it's not a drug, but it's like a drug that's just like that's on true. Every shelf in every store in everything that actually looks good.
Okay, so we have a kid. Okay, what are we doing?
We don't.
No, but like, are we like, everyone seems to nowadays be like, no sugar before one, and then everyone does that like
before 1 year
when
old.
They turn one, they give them a cake. And I did watch my like nephew at one get a cake and be like, that does look like he's getting a drug. It was like the cutest thing ever. He was like, oh. And then the other nephew just was like, I don't even like this, and still doesn't like sugar. So there's like an interesting
like just genetic component.
Yeah. So like it feels like culturally right now, everyone's like smash cake at one. Mm-hmm. But before one, like a lot of people aren't giving their kids like free sugar.
Yeah.
Would I feel like we'd do the same.
Yeah, I think so.
We'd maybe become radicalized Mark Hyman.
I think just like focusing on whole foods is smarter. Like actually fruit can taste so good. Like pineapple and mango, I'm always like, these can't be good for you, but they obviously are. Like they have, well, obviously you don't want to eat so much sugar from fruit either, but like whenever I eat pineapple, I'm just like, has this been doused in syrup?
Yeah, it's so good. Too bad we don't live in the tropics and it's like so much money here in Toronto. And if you look outside right now, it's like a desolate wasteland. Like it is, like we have an interesting issue being from Toronto, where like the season of nice, actually good fruit for us is like so rare.
Yeah.
It's like August, we get blueberries that taste good.
And cost like a reasonable amount.
Yeah, yeah.
Every other time of year, it's like $6 for a tiny little carton.
It's like traveled more than most people I know from Guatemala. But yeah, like it is, I think that my studies made me really be like, I'm against all this sugar addiction fad, and it's all over the internet, it's all over science podcasts. But I'm like, okay, I kind of realizing now, I get where it's coming from a bit more. It's just so easy to access. It's cheap. And the companies are designing it to make you want it. So I'm like, okay, I get it. They're like fighting against a pretty big force in our lives.
Yeah. It is like a huge industry. And I think that's part of the reason why they're like trying to rally people in this way.
Yeah.
Because it's like you are up against literally billions, if not trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
That are invested in still being able to sell products that taste good.
Yeah. And it's like ice cream is like nostalgia.
I want to say I have like one last study that was an umbrella review. I actually like haven't really heard that term before. So it was looking at 73 meta-analyses.
Whoa, we're getting big. Lot.
This came out in 2023, so it's recent. Looking at how sugar affects your body. So the top level goes from like the things that were really good quality to low quality evidence. So the big ones were like, there are significant harmful associations between sugar consumption and 18 metabolic outcomes, 10 cardiovascular outcomes, 7 cancer outcomes, and then 10 others. So like dental, allergies.
Whoa, we did not talk about like cavities.
Yeah, obviously like especially free sugar is like we're like sitting on your teeth and calling in the bacteria.
Like dentists are probably screaming at us right now. Yeah,
there was moderate quality evidence that the highest versus lowest dietary sugar consumption was associated with increased body weight.
Okay.
So that's interesting. That's only moderate.
Yeah.
I think people think like, oh, you're eating sugar, you're going to gain weight.
Yeah.
Yes, there's some evidence for that, but it's not like the strongest. And then low quality evidence that each serving per week increment of sugar of a sweetened beverage was associated with, this is for you, a 4% higher risk of gout.
Oh, hello, my gout friends. How we doing out there?
So also on that same note, each 250 milliliters of a sweetened beverage per day was associated with a 17% higher risk of coronary heart disease. Hmm. So 17% and 4%. So I don't know if that was like between genders, like, I don't know why it says that. And then there was an association with pancreatic cancer as well.
Interesting.
Based on like eating a fructose consumption every
day. Okay, so I get what's happening. It's like people are like, that's pretty strong evidence.
We're in the era of like, obviously humans are consuming more sugar than ever before.
And I feel like it's like, okay, we have a lot of evidence to say that it is bad for you. My evidence is maybe saying it's not the same as a drug. It's not an addiction necessarily.
If you have it in moderation, like don't worry.
Chill. But it's like it still is worth thinking about the damage it could and is doing to your body, and you're maybe up against the easy access, the companies, the people like designing
and
it.
And like the not a lot of choice. Like you have choices for Whole Foods, but you go to a grocery store and it's like everything on the counter like is owned by like one or two companies that own all these different brands. And so, and then, yeah, even the ones that are pitching themselves as healthy, often there's a catch somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're just at the grocery store. It's so hard. It's like, this is just one topic. This is sugar. What about like every other thing we have to worry about? Like we've talked just about intermittent fasting. We've talked like about coffee. We've talked about exercise. Like people are just overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I think it sucks to be like, think about all these micro things. Like people just want to live their life, and it's important to know this, but I think it's also exhausting when you're like, our world should be set up in a way that helps us thrive. Like that's what our like governments should help to manage is like when you go to the grocery store, and it's different in Canada. Like we have a lot of foods here
that are regulated.
Yeah, like we can't get a lot of American foods.
Yeah, we can't get American cereals. Like Twix yeah, because
there's
kids
like
or whatever.
Too much sugar in them.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Not to say like Canada, like Europe's even better in that sense, where it's like there's a lot of North American foods that you would never find there. I'm not saying they don't have their own issues.
I guess that is kind of crazy that like on every kids channel growing up, it was just like Fruit Loops ads yeah. and like
Fruit by the
Charms.
Foot.
Like
it's all the snacks.
I'm yeah. so changing my tune. I'm so anti-sugar right now. It's crazy. Well, I'm just like, that is so wild. Like those are the most memorable TV ads. I like can yeah. picture the toucan mm-hmm. from Fruit Loops. I can picture the despair mm-hmm. I felt because I never had them and I'd get them once on vacation and was actually like, actually, I was always let down.
Oh, I love Fruit Loops.
No, Fruit Loops.
Yeah, I said that really weird.
Oh, somebody's got some Fruit Loops. Wow. Gay guy with lips.
I was thinking.
No, well, I think because I was so not allowed sugar, so granola parents, that when we went on trips, we'd get those like, mm-hmm. I don't know if people had these in America, but in Canada, you get these packages of like 8 in like saran wrap and they're tiny boxes. And in theory, they were actually designed that you would cut the box open mm-hmm. and
pour
milk in. Yeah. I never would do that.
Oh, I would always do that.
I always felt because I was so desperate for finally getting sweet sugar that I thought I would maybe like miss out on some, that I would like dump it into a bowl and like scrape the baby. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm not risking
like some powder
milk
in there.
Yeah. So then I would dump it into a bowl and I would always be like, huh, that's like half a bowl. Like, well, there's never that much in there.
Yeah, it's actually nothing.
And I think because I'd waited and like seen Toucan Sam and like had such big buildup that when I ate the Fruit Loop, I was like, wait.
Well, news alert, news flash. Like the cereal in America tastes different.
Oh.
Like I remember we would get those when my family would like go to Florida.
And it'd be
road
extra
trips.
Good.
No, some of them I'd hate because you're used to the ones in Canada.
That like, are
Corn Pops, completely different in America.
Wait, which one's a Corn Pop?
The like puffed up circular balls.
Cut your mouth?
No,
that's Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, Cap'n Crunch.
That one has like needles in it.
Yeah, does Corn Pops kind of does it too. But in America, they're like flat and they tasted completely different. And I feel like Fruit Loops in those boxes, I always was like, it's not the same, but it'll do.
They're like, this is for all the sad people who only get these on vacation. They don't need them. But I also remember what pissed me off about those 8-packs is like one would be like something we would get, like a Bran Flake or something. Like it would be like, it would actually be like only seven. Yes. I'd be like, and then if there'd be like this sad little box left that was like, I guess Corn Flakes or something. I'm like, that doesn't count. Like not even a Frosted Flake. And it would just sit there and I'd be so angry and be like, I guess I'm having the Corn Flake on my trip. But it is like crazy. Like even as a kid, I was so enamored by those cereals because they were like advertised to me with like cartoons mm-hmm. and like just the joy of kids laughing while like a toucan fed them a gorgeous, also quote unquote fruit. It was like a strawberry and it's like, yeah.
And our parents probably bought, I mean, maybe not yours, but mine definitely like, oh, it's fruit.
No, they didn't. That's so rude. They're like, oh, we're giving him blueberries and strawberries and cherries.
I just feel like back in the day, they probably were like, with real fruit flavor. Like it definitely.
Oh my God. That is like so real fruit flavor is so, my God.
That was probably trademarked.
Yeah.
It was just like the name of the dye.
Yeah. 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 Like, okay. Yeah. If that's still happening, if those ads are still out there, then okay, fine. Everyone should be eating disgusting shredded wheat that I would eat growing up.
Yeah, but even that I don't think is healthy, to be honest. Other than fiber, I think like,
yeah, well, there's no sugar in it.
There's probably,
if there
sugar.
Is, that's sad because it tastes like,
but like what
crap.
nutrients are you getting out of that?
Fiber, carb. Like no, you're getting carb. It's just not free. Like you just said, there's no free sugar.
I think my hot take, and I don't like cereal that much, except for as a dessert. I think cereal isn't worth eating.
Well, I think it's, we're just talking about breakfast.
That's my own personal
kids.
Hot take. Yeah,
like it's hard because your kid's coming out of their room, and it's just like you have to go to school, and it's like, what?
Yeah,
I'm gonna like bake you an egg.
I'm not sure what the right choice is, but I'm always kind of like cereal feels like it's not. I can't imagine any cereal being that healthy.
Well, that's why, like,
unless you're like also putting nuts on it.
Yeah, the white
some real
ass,
fruit
like,
on
culture
it,
like, of like that oatmeal, yogurt, fruit, yeah. and nuts is like, okay, fine. I guess that is like cereal,
yeah.
per se. For Irish people with no class, aka me. But yeah, no, I don't know. I'm confused about sugar now, and I think I'm gonna like think a little bit more about it as I like shop and also watch parents around their kids. I'm asking parents a lot more now and be like, is this like freaking you out the way that online it's making me feel like people are freaking out?
Yeah. Well, that's all I have to say about that. Should we take a break?
Yeah.
And then we'll come back.
I want to hear about sugar daddies.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
It's time to talk about sugar daddies and sugar mama.
Okay, do you think being a sugar daddy or having a sugar daddy is hot? Okay, wait. Would you rather... Okay. Would you rather... This is like hashtag top or bottom, kind of. But not. Nothing's binary. Would you rather be a said sugar daddy or have a said sugar daddy?
I wouldn't mind doing both. Like, in different versions.
Verse king.
Yeah.
No, we get gun to head. Choose one.
Oh, then I'd rather have a sugar daddy.
Oh my God, funny, because I'd rather be a sugar daddy.
Why?
Now I'm like we're not just talking about topping and bottoming. Because there's something, I don't know. I
need somebody to be like, just tell me what to fucking do. Like, I need, I not to be like dommed sexually.
Okay, like, wow, we have like so love no, us. I just someone listening to me like, what should we do? Should we feed our kids sugar? And there's like domming, topping, like full change.
No, I just mean like, I just imagine like having like a figure like that in my life. It would be to be like, okay, yeah, just like tell me what to do, because I overthink everything and I just need someone to like,
yeah. And I guess it's charge. Like, I love making decisions. I love choosing. And I feel like I'm good at spending money. No, like I feel like I'm like, I love spending money on people, but not like a kink vibe. Some people like that's
like part of the appeal. Yeah,
but I only recently in my life was like, wait, like I kind of get that, maybe just because I'm getting older.
Well, let's get into the research, because it's okay. Interesting that money, a lot of people picture it just for money, but a lot of times that's only one part of the equation
of being a sugar daddy / sugar mama.
Yeah, so and, or a sugar baby
or a sugar they them.
Yeah, well, baby can be, is gender neutral.
So. Oh, okay, gotcha.
So this is in the Journal of Sex Research, and they were looking into the dynamics of these relationships between what they call sugar benefactors, which is like...
Okay, obsessed with science, always making everything more boring.
No, the
sugar... Do you want to be a sugar benefactor?
Well, at least that encompasses anyone who wants to be. No, it's okay. Because the previous research was like all focused on how to differentiate this relationship from traditional sex work, or it was studying public perception. This is actually looking within the relationship. Does that make sense?
Okay.
There's not very much like research on sugar benefactors, sugar babies. Does that make sense?
It's because a lot of it would maybe be about sex work.
Well, they were, most previous research they said was about how it's different than sex work.
Yes.
Or how the public perceives the sugar daddy relationship.
Because it is different, obviously.
Yeah. Now we're talking about like, okay, well, what's going on inside of these?
Oh my God, I'm obsessed.
So a couple of little cute facts. So sugar babies on average are 28.76 years old, which
Wait,
I was like...
sugar babies, these are the benefactors?
No, the benefactor is like the older...
The giver?
Like
the giver. My God, yeah. I'm confused.
The benefactor is like the giver, the baby.
No, okay, we need to stop. We're not doing this properly.
Okay.
The sugar benefactor is the sugar daddy, sugar mama,
yes.
Sugar...
And the sugar
the money.
Baby
The sugar
is
baby
the
is the receiver.
Yeah, and if you don't... Like, we never defined this, so if you're like, what the fuck? fuck are they talking about? Like, a sugar daddy is someone who would, like, you know, pay you, presumably, to not only just, like, possibly have sex with them, but also, like, kind of be in a relationship with them, go on trips with them. Like, you'd be in a relationship, but there would be a financial part.
Also,
the sugar being, like, they're paying you.
It's kind of like, we just talked a whole episode about sugar, so this is extremely confusing. Because, like, by sugar at this point, we need money, and we mean, like,
that's
adult relationships.
When I was looking up sugar, these studies came up, and I was like, okay, that's going to be my wedge.
I think we also need to do a full episode on this.
Okay, sure.
But, like, continue.
We totally can.
Because, yeah. I want to find every, like, I just am so curious.
So, I thought 28.76 years old was like, okay, I could still be a sugar baby.
Oh, I thought
I would have been younger.
Yeah, that made me feel good because it made me be like, wow, I'm just at the beginning of my ability to be a sugar benefactor daddy.
Well, the sugar benefactors on average are 48.15. These are averages.
Oh my God, I have so much time to accrue some wealth.
Yeah, I don't think. Okay, moving on. So, primary motivation for sugar babies
is
financial compensation. That's one of them. But they also do seek emotional connection, companionship, and the opportunity to experience a lifestyle beyond their means. So a lot of sugar babies, they're not just doing it for money.
I'm obsessed with this.
It brings them into a world that maybe they, like, are getting brought on trips and parties and stuff that they otherwise wouldn't have access to.
And a 47.8-year-old person is hot.
Yeah.
Because they, like, know themselves.
There is a misconception, that's not to say, and also not to be ageist, but it's not like people picture, oh, like a really old man who no one would ever want to be with has to be a sugar daddy. But there's lots of, like, people who just don't necessarily want to be in long-term relationships, who have a lot of money and are just, like, want to pay people to have sex with or go on trips with and have emotional connections without, like, having to commit.
Do you think that they, like, converse about it and go, like, I'm your sugar benefactor, aren't I? Or do you think it's just, like, happens?
Most of these relationships are, from the get-go, very clear. That's my assumption. I don't think it's like you accidentally become a sugar daddy. I think
you could. I'm like, we need to make an episode on this because I'm like, I want to talk about this. But you could just be like, I'm 48.7 or whatever. What was it?
0.15.
I'm 48.15. Therefore, I have, like, maybe paid a lot of my mortgage and I have a lot more money. And now you're 28.76 and you met me. And of course I'm going to pay because I have more money and it is a really natural thing. And you're never saying I'm your sugar daddy.
That's not what this study is about.
This is about people who are like,
this is about
sugar,
like,
daddy.
A proper real, people who are, like, in these relationships intentionally.
Obsessed.
Okay, I think you're continue. Not wrong that there, of course, are relationships where, like, one person is much more wealthy and ends up, like, sharing that wealth in a way, but this is, like, I think if you're one of these sugar babies, it's, you're not, like, you're like, I'm here for these other things. If you stop paying me, we're not together anymore. Yeah.
Oh my God, I just feel like I just got broken up with because, well, I was pretending I was a sugar daddy.
So for the benefactors, they're driven by the desire for companionship and intimacy with partners that are perceived as more attractive or otherwise out of their league. So that kind of is not that surprising. Often coupled with a sense of adventure and appeal of mentoring younger partners. That's you.
Wait, excuse me. Why is that me?
Because you were like, oh, I want to have a younger person.
I never said I wanted a younger person. I never said that. I don't want a younger person. I want to choose the restaurant, pay for it, be like that.
Oh, you don't care their age?
No. I actually don't even care. Like, obviously, if they're hot,
so you're like a sugar cousin.
Like, what I'm saying is, like, there's something to me that I've noticed is attractive about paying for things. And because I really know what I like sharing what I like without having to have the person be like, oh, this is expensive, or oh, this is whatever. Like, I think I've just started to realize, like, that turns me on.
Okay, wow. Start spending your money on me.
No, I know. It's funny because I, like, know you so well. I know how much money you have that I'm like, okay, I'll spend your money on me. Okay.
Benefactors on average have more partners than babies. That means they're more actively seeking, like, different people to do this with. Then from the baby perspective, it was like they usually had, like, 1 to 3 of these relationships in over the course of a long time. Whereas the benefactors might have, like, 6 of them through, like,
my God.
Not at once necessarily.
Talk to Andrew Huberman. Okay. Someone's got a lot of money and he's got
he's
sick.
A benefactor.
He's
for
a
sure.
benefactor. Like, he is the epitome of a sugar daddy. He's so hot, looks like a sugar daddy, and he cheats with all the girlies.
Interestingly, contrary to what you might expect, participants report only moderate endorsement of traditional gender roles.
Wait, what?
Like, a lot of people picture, like, this being very gendered. Like, oh, you're the male, you're the masculine one, and then, like, it's the sugar baby's the girl who's, like...
Oh, my God, it's so hot to think of a woman doing it to a man.
Yeah, and the other thing I thought was really interesting was that...
oh, my God.
A lot of times, the sugar baby in the relationship is actually seen as the one with the power. Like, when they... This is part of the study where they were, like, because they have... beauty and youth, that's their form of power.
Yeah, that is more powerful.
They're like, I can find someone else who can pay me. Like, your money is like, lots of people have money. So, like, a lot of sugar, quote unquote, daddies or mommies were like, had an insecurity around that they didn't feel like they were in the power position necessarily. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, wow. Because it's like, yeah, it is true. Money can't buy you.
It was like the babies get a sense of empowerment from feeling desired and valuable and sexy.
That's an interesting intellectual question. What is more powerful, money or youth?
Yeah. And in uncertainty and insecurity for the like benefactor is like, do they actually like me? Like, is it just my money or are we having like a real connection? So they're not certain. The study was actually really long and the review of it was really interesting. So I didn't, that's all those were just a couple interesting points. The quote that I took from it was just saying, sugar arrangements are not as simple as they seem or as they are depicted frequently online. What's most interesting about them is that they clearly involve aspects of both transactional sex and traditional romantic relationships.
Yeah. Okay. So what is this journal? Because I kind of want to subscribe to it. The Journal of Sex.
Sex Research. Yeah.
That is so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I'm in my sugar daddy phase.
I'll see if I can find the name of the study here. I'll open it.
Not that I've ever really done that, but like...
The study is called I Was Worshipped and in Control. Sugar arrangements involving transactional sex from the perspective of both sugar babies and sugar benefactors.
Okay, sugar baby and sugar benefactor is the worst.
Wait, if you're Canadian, do you remember a sugar baby?
Yeah.
I'm sugar baby, the real sugar baby.
Dr. the Rick Klein, my pregnant.
But I don't know. I'm like, why am I so interested in this? Oh, you know the game of like when you're in like a gay space and you're like, is that like when we were in Mexico, we're like, is that a father and a son or a sugar benefactor and a sugar baby?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like that is like...
That game's scary.
Sometimes. That game's really scary. That game's really scary. But I guess I find it interesting because we're kind of maybe in the middle age.
And like people think that you're my sugar daddy.
I mean, that's so mean. We're the exact same age. In fact, you're older than me. No,
I'm still be a sugar daddy, as we said.
No, I think it's I'm sugar daddy, the real sugar daddy. Like all the other sugar daddies are just sugar daddy. Like I think because we're not like if we were 28. No, I'm saying I think it's for me particularly fascinating because if we're falling right in between 28.76 and 48.15. Mm. We're on that sort. I feel like a lot of people our age are actually deciding, are they going to be a daddy and have a kid? Like, I think it's relating to that. I'm going like, wait.
Which one am I?
And so this is like a weird, I think it's like a gay game in your head to be like, where are you 35-year-old feeling? Are you feeling sugar daddy or sugar baby?
And I'm assuming most of this was on heterosexual people, but it is interesting to think about the gay community in particular because gay men, as we know, I'm speaking as gay men, like party for a really long time and don't often have traditional relationships that I'm sure there's like a lot of gay men have to go through the phase where they're like, I am old now. So am I the daddy? Like, do I have to play that role? Like, if I want a younger guy, do I have to really be like, I'm the daddy? Because some people will be like, don't call me daddy. And some people are like, want to own it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, there's a lot of people who will be like a hairy, hot man who will be like, do not call me daddy. Because obviously in their head, they're like, I'm still a twink. But it's like, you look like Andrew Huberman. But yeah, I think that like also... it maybe is more prevalent in hetero stuff. Like, I think that gay guys are actually so obsessed with like looks and youth that like there's something else happening. Like when I used to go to my trainer, they all were like in this like King West, like downtown, like Toronto scene.
The straights.
And they were talking about like, I just couldn't believe how many young, beautiful women were with the people who were at this training thing, who were these rich older guys. Like they were obviously attractive. Like they weren't like,
I mean, like it's pretty sweet if you're young and you're just like, yeah, pay for my stuff.
But I kept being like, you're hot. Where is this going down? That's what I was like. I'm like, when I go out I'm going to places where everyone's kind of my age.
Yeah, that's true.
And I kept asking my trainer because I would see these couples where I'd kind of be like, that man, like he'd either be like, oh, he's divorced or he's just never married. And I'm like, where did he meet her? And he's like, there's
clubs
systems
like
of clubs where it's kind of like, the girls are young and hot and they're like, I want to go clubbing. I don't want to pay and I'm kind of like, wait, I feel like at least in my gay world, I haven't seen
like age segregated kind of.
Yeah. Or I haven't necessarily been like, it's not so obvious, like who's buying the drink for who.
Yeah.
And who is, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, we got a booth over here. So now these like hot young girls come in it, like that kind of club thing is like
we've
least,
never been in club culture like that.
Like maybe I'm just not invited to any of those parties, but I do think that the hetero sugar benefactor sugar baby thing is maybe a little bit like culturally more normal even though
in straight culture.
I just hearing about these clubs that again I've never been to, but I've been told there's like systems for it. I was like, whoa, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
And the women are kind of like, and these guys are actually like, I'm like, that guy's like hot. Like a lot of these guys are like 48.17.
No, that is interesting. I've never thought about it in the gay community that much. Cause also I think the gay community has so many different like sexual interests and kinks that there are a lot of guys, young guys who are just actually also like want an older guy. Not just for like money or anything. Not to say that, I think part of this study was to say it's not just for money. Like the young girls might be with older guys that are like, I do want a romantic relationship with someone who's mature, who can buy me things, who can like support me and have a nice intimate relationship.
That's what I also mean. I'm like 48.15 year olds do know themselves better than me.
Yeah.
And know themselves better than 28.76 year old boys or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there's more than just, I want to study this.
Okay. We can look more into it.
We're going to do a full episode. So mine is so much less interesting.
Okay.
And it's,
let's sell it to me.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's talking about biological age as opposed to your real age. So they can do studies on this. And a lot of it has to do with methylation within your body. And they found
that. I'm so scared. Is this like a thing I can do and find out?
No. Okay. It actually does not concern you at all.
Because I want to try that. And I'm like, I'm going to be so much older than I should be.
Yeah. No. Don't. Like,
they're going to be like, oh, you have the memory of a goldfish? You're 72.
No, they're like, you ate Lucky Charms as a kid. It was about how, so when you are pregnant and going through pregnancy, there's an increase of methylation and your biological age increases.
While you're pregnant.
And then after you're pregnant, when you're like quote unquote recovering, within 3 to 6 months, it goes back to more accurately your normal age. Mm. And the reason they thought that this was important was that sometimes like people who are pregnant will go through things and literally be like, I feel so like either old or they're like struggling in these like ways and they're trying to be like, okay, maybe it's the methylation that's happening in their body is actually impacting their brain, the way they're feeling, all these things to be like, they're trying to figure out what could be the evolutionary
reason,
but the methylation in your body increases to the point that your biological age increases whilst pregnant.
Huh.
I was like, that is really, I think it's just, was that just like my British popped out?
Yeah. I've never used that word ever.
I guess I'm sugar daddy if I'm using the word wilt. But yeah, it was just like, I feel like sometimes it's so important to remember like the beauty and intensity of pregnancy. And I love when things like kind of
like reveal more about that.
Yeah. And allow like people who are pregnant to be like, this is so challenging.
Like my body's going through not just making a baby.
Unbelievable things that then you do have to like recover from. Like you do have to always understand that someone who's been pregnant and then pushed a kid out of them.
Oh yeah, that's really amazing. Like to be a man is pathetic.
Absolutely pathetic. No,
and to be a woman is absolutely unbelievable and amazing.
That's why men are always like, oh my gosh, I intermittent fast. Like, they're like trying to give themselves a challenge.
If I could have a baby, I would try. Like, I should take that back because there's obviously many like women or females who don't want to do that. I'm not saying you should.
But also like,
but I'm just like, wow, I wish I could do that with my body.
Yeah. And it's also like, think about like when I got my wisdom teeth out, I was like scared for 2 weeks leading up to it. And then I got it out and was like, I guess I can come back and conquer anything. It's like, that's my wisdom teeth. They knocked me out.
Yeah.
Like the idea of the person with the vagina going through that and creating a kid is the most unbelievable biological feat. Like
it's crazy.
It's just, It's like, so move cool. over the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who's ever done that.
It's almost magical.
It's, yeah. And it's just like, and it doesn't get appreciated properly yeah. or probably even studied properly.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. absolutely
okay, we
amazing.
Just discovered pregnancy.
We're like actually the two people who will never ever experience. Yeah, being gay, whoa.
The worst of the worst.
I know. It's like homophobes are on to something. I'm kidding. We cannot go there. Okay, we're going to have a sugar daddy episode coming out. We have a commune episode coming out. We have a Kegel episode coming out. We have a cock ring episode coming yeah. out. We're going for it.
So let's send us some messages about those things if you want to be on the pod in a little comment corner moment.
Okay, thanks for listening. Also, both.
See ya.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.